Diane Kaufman from the Hold On Campaign for Suicide Prevention. That organization is putting on an art contest for Oregon youth between the ages of 13 and 21. That starts in May. More information is online at holdoncampaign.org. You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Stay with us.
Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, May 19th at 6 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting. It will be held at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
Hey there, relatives. We missed you, and I know you missed us. Rosity Native Radio is returning to the airwaves starting May 15th. Nick and I will be back in the saddle again to bring you all the Indigenous news, music, and more. So stay tuned, 90.7 FM, Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with my co-host, Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers. We host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Susie and Ellen. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you both. So, would you start just by telling us a little bit about your background as educators?
I can go first. My name's Susie Kasouf. I've been a teacher for 5 years. I teach ninth grade social studies. I'm a contributor to the Zen Education Project and Rethinking Schools. And yeah, I think that's it.
I'm Ellen, and I am an elementary school teacher over here in Washington County, and
great. How long have you been a teacher?
This is my 6th year. I think I started in COVID.
Okay.
Oh wow.
Oh, me too, then. So 6 years for me.
Oh, the same. Okay, interesting. All
Awesome.
right. Well, we invited you on the show today to talk about what's it been like to teach about Palestine. So, Ellen, you recently decided that you wanted to host a workshop for educators about that. Can you share why you wanted to put on an event for your colleagues? What was your plan for that event?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I think since 10 years ago, when kind of my college friends educated me about Palestine, I have always thought of Palestine as the way to know what people's real values are, right? Because there's a lot of people that say that they're about human rights and they're progressive, etc. But then when you bring up Palestine, it's kind of been always like a way for me to distinguish between people who are actually committed to like the values of like humanity versus people who are just easily manipulated by like liberal political leaders who are ultimately working for like large lobby groups. So it's always been important to me. But, you know, obviously after October 7th, it became, I think all of us, right, as educators started feeling more of a sense of urgency because, like, it's our job to teach people the truth. And there's so much obfuscation of the truth. So what was your original question? Your question was, why did I do this workshop? Because it felt really needed to talk about Palestine in general. And then I met Bill Bigelow through Northwest Teaching for Social Justice. And he told me that they had a Rethinking Schools publication on teaching Palestine now. And I was like, this is great. This is so great. This is so empowering because, you know, as teachers, we get so much like scrutiny on how we teach. So I had been really nervous about like, how do I teach about this? How do I talk to other teachers about this? So it just felt like such a gift to have this book. And then he was like, hey, but by the way, I can talk to your local about it. I can present to your local about it, all casual. And I was like, oh yeah, that would be great. I'm sure they would be so down. So that was wise. I just thought it was really important and a great opportunity and a huge gift from Rethinking Schools.
So what happened when you approached your union leadership about utilizing your union space for the workshop?
So I guess I did approach them with a little bit of naivety. Like I had heard, you know, people who were real go-getters and all about like solidarity and power building in the union kind of mentioned that the leadership tended to block like work that was meaningful. And so I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but I did approach them with just like, hey, I got this offer from Bill Bigelow. Isn't it so great? How do we book the room? How do we advertise it? The response I got was I emailed them, and then I approached them in person as well. And they said, you know, we saw your email, sounds so cool, but there is this OEA policy, the Oregon Education Association, you know, that policy that we can't use our space for external organizations. So sorry, I don't know if that's going to work out. And I was like, what do you mean? Who's the external organization? They were like, well, Rethinking Schools. And I was like, I'm confused. I think we're inviting them as a guest. And they were like, oh, you know, they just kept coming back to the policy. And I was like, okay. I just said like, well, wouldn't this just be a BEA hosted event? And they were like, well, okay, well, we got some feedback after our ceasefire resolution. So I said, oh, okay. So what you're saying is that BEA doesn't want to endorse teaching about Palestine. And they said, well, let me take it to the executive board. Like, okay. I think that kind of like made me realize that, oh, okay, I guess I should communicate with them in the same way that one should communicate with administrators or supervisors, right? Which is like only in writing with witnesses. Because I had some suspicions that this thing about the OEA policy was not maybe super true. So I did. I emailed them afterwards, and I CC'd everyone I knew in my local who is, you know, also wants to teach about Palestine and teach the truth. And I said, can you show me that policy? And also, why, you know, if the executive board were to vote against holding this workshop, could you give us a written explanation for why? Because this is a book from a reputable publisher about teaching. Like, I don't understand what reason there could possibly be to block this. And other people in the email also said, yeah, I don't know what policy you're talking about. What policy are you talking about, including Stephen? You know, and eventually they respond, oh, it was just a COVID policy or something. Never mind. But the executive board voted to host it. So we'll host it. So that was kind of how it came to be.
You alluded to the fact that there was some response to signing on to a ceasefire. Can you just say just a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in November of 2023, our local put out, just made like a ceasefire resolution saying, you know, we're very concerned about civilians, both Israeli and Palestinian, because of all of the violence. That was all. And it sounded like they got, you know, a lot of backlash for that remarkably neutral resolution.
Wow. So can you also talk about what was happening on social media during that same time frame with a member of your local leading up to the event?
Yeah, so once we were planning and organizing the event, and the leadership was, you know, doing all the logistical aspects of organizing this event, and the first time it went out in like a BEA news email, we immediately got somebody in our like Facebook page that's only for members of the local, you know, saying, complaining that this was anti-Israel propaganda, and that they were, you know, very concerned about the anti-Semitism in our schools and in our union. And it was kind of interesting because that actual original post got very few likes. And the first comment on it was a really, really well thought out comment, just explaining like, hey, justice is not a zero sum game. You know, this teaching Palestine is not something that is against Jewish people. And like, you know, just explaining kind of like basic things. And that comment actually got like, if I could do my math, I want to say they got like six times as much likes as the original post. And then there was also a lot of comments afterwards, you know, kind of challenging this person, like, can you explain why it's anti-Israel propaganda? Can you explain how this is harmful to Jewish people at all? Like, can you, like, have you even read this book? You know, shouldn't we as a labor union be taking, like, the position of educating about apartheid and genocide? And so that was all going on, and I was staying out of it because I don't like arguing with people online. But I was posting about the event on the page just as reminders, like, hey, don't forget about this event. And the night before the event, I posted again, just being like, this is tomorrow. And that same poster, original poster, suddenly was in my DMs and demanding to know where I worked, demanding an explanation for why they couldn't find me when they searched me in the TSPC database, which is the Teacher Practice and Standards Commission. They said, I couldn't find you in the database. Like, do you even have a teaching license? Do you even teach in Beaverton? And I was pretty alarmed by that and, you know, did a little research on this person and found that they're connected to, like, event programming that is not only Zionist, but, you know, talks about, like, anti-white hate as a problem, right? So I was alarmed, and they had also commented on the page, making the same demands to know about who I was and where I worked. So, yeah, it made me pretty nervous, and I kind of reached out to union leadership and to my supervisor at my workplace, just being like, this is going on, this makes me really uncomfortable. And I told union leadership, like, hey, can you please not let this person into this event? Because union leadership had mentioned that, in their words, some people who have been very vocally opposed to this event are registered and attending. So, you know, I sent screenshots and I was like, hey, this is pretty uncomfortable. Can you not let them in? And I didn't get a response. I did get a response. I don't know if that's something you want me to talk about now or if that's for a later question.
Well, let's talk about it a little bit later, because I want to pop over to Susie. And can you share what your role was at the event, and also a little bit about the Rethinking Schools Teaching Palestine that you co-edited and what resource it provides?
Sure. Yes, I'd be happy to. So Teaching Palestine is a book that Rethinking Schools put out this year. It's called Teaching Palestine: Lessons, Stories, Voices, which I think really says it all. So we have in here classroom lessons. We have articles from teachers about teaching Palestine. We have articles from unions about teaching Palestine. We have a lot of poetry. We have stories. We have articles from scholars about the region. And I feel really honored to have been part of the team who put this together. We've got five amazing educators, me being one of them, but really this team, as Ellen was talking about, Bill Bigelow, the legend Bill Bigelow on here. We've got Jesse Hagopian, who actually traveled to Palestine with a delegation of African American leaders here. And he said that when he was there, one of the women he was with said that she hadn't seen oppression like this, like, since the Jim Crow South. We have Adam Sanchez, who's a editor at Rethinking Schools, brilliant educator, Jewish American, and Samia Shoman is Palestinian American. She's a administrator in San Francisco Bay Area. And at the event, Bill graciously let me tag along to facilitate a portion where we had posters from the book, a lot of the imagery from the book, along with snippets from the book around the room. And we did a gallery walk during that, so we could just kind of interface with the book a little bit.
That's great. And talk about what happened the day of the events. Did things go as planned? How were those that were in attendance engaging with the subject matter and the activities? And that could go to either one of you or both of you. How did it go from your perspective?
Who do you want to talk?
I was doing nose goes.
Okay, I'll go. there's lots to say about how it didn't go as planned, but I want to start with, how it did, because I thought that there were a lot of really great things about the event. It started with a lesson that I've actually talked about on the show before called Teaching the Seeds of the Violence in the Region by Bill Bigelow, that you could find if you go to the Zen Education Project. It's just a really thorough, interesting mixer role play about the early days of Zionism. And then, during the debrief from that, I thought overall most of the people in attendance had really smart, thoughtful things to say, thoughtful ways that they're seeing a connection between the history and the violence today. And then there was also some people in attendance who just, weren't there to learn and just were there to disrupt the event and to come in and maybe I'll let Alan take it from there.
Yeah, I agree. I think it overall, the event definitely still had a very meaningful impact in the sense that most of the people there were definitely there to learn. I don't think that anybody there was super caught off guard by the fact that there were disruptors there. Mm-hmm. So I think they were handled extremely well by the other participants, who just kind of kindly responded with here's why your talking points don't make sense and are not relevant. And, keeping the focus on humanity. And you could definitely tell, right, that it was a room full of good teachers who care about job teaching. So I don't think, if the goal of the Zionist participants was to take away some of the airtime of the discussion, then they succeeded in that. But I certainly don't think they deterred anybody from their commitment to teaching about Palestine. But they just you know, were just reciting Zionist talking points.
Yeah, and Ellen, if it's okay if I jump in. I mean, I think they really exposed themselves, because it all kind of came to this climax when one of them said, you know, there's no such thing as Palestine, there's no such thing as Palestinians, which, I mean, how laid bare can you make it, right? Like, this whole project is about trying to correct for the erasure of Palestinians from the narrative. And then we have people there just so explicitly trying to continue that erasure. Yeah. So that was, of course, very harmful for the Palestinians in the room. Yeah.
That was pretty, I mean, it was like, oh, okay. Like, if nobody was sure before this that you were a colonizer, like, you just made it. Yeah. That's exactly what colonizers always try to say, is that indigenous people don't exist. Yeah. So that happened. But, you know, I think the Bill Bigelow was kind of like facilitating at that moment, and did a really good job of coming back with more points from the book. And Susie also did a really good job of kind of recognizing that the harm had happened and being like, let's take a deep breath and move on. And the disruption did not continue till the end. So most people were just really excited to learn. I talked to a lot of people afterwards who were like, oh, it was so great. I learned so much. It was so great to learn. You know, those people were kind of like interesting, but most people found it really empowering. And we were giving out 27 copies, donated copies of the book. And even though, you know, it ended, the time had ended, people still stayed to like make sure that they got their copy of the book. So they were very excited to get them.
That's great.
So Ellen, you were starting to talk about this, about some follow-up from your local union leadership, and you know, what has that been like post event? What did you ask for? How's the response been? And then just to add to that, like, why do you think it's important for our unions to support educators teaching about Palestine?
So I appreciate that the union leadership went through the motions of putting on this event with fidelity and advertising it properly, and, you know, they said they wanted to treat it like it wasn't a controversial or political event, because it shouldn't be. And I was like, yeah, okay, I understand that. I think ultimately to me, it felt like the union leadership was spending a lot of their energy on placating Zionists than they were on thinking about, like, solidarity or with people who are actually targets of state violence, if that makes sense. So like I was saying, I asked the union leadership before, like, please don't let this person into the event. Like, they're clearly acting in so much bad faith. And like, I don't even feel safe. So if I don't feel safe, I don't think our Palestinian participants are gonna feel safe. And I got a text back, because I sent it as an email and a text, that request. And I was not the only one that made that request in email. And I got a text back saying, oh, you know, don't worry, I'll make sure to stop that person at the door. They're definitely not ready to engage in good faith. So I thought, oh my goodness, okay, good. And I also let other people know who were planning to attend, like, oh yeah, that person's not gonna be there, don't worry. And then they were very much there. And we all kind of like realized, like, you know, with horror, that they were there. We were like, wait a minute, isn't that them? And so those of us who felt particularly uncomfortable with it, went up to union leadership during the event and were kind of like, what's going on? Why are they here? I thought you said they weren't going to be here. And we just got like a lot of like emphatic explanation of technicality, like, oh, well, like, technically we have to let them in because they're members. And I was like, okay, but I thought you said that you weren't going to let them in. They said, no, I said I was going to stop them at the door to remind them how to behave, to remind them to behave properly, and, you know, be respectful. And I was like, okay, I see how I fell prey to ambiguity there. And so then we asked, like, okay, well, what can you do? What steps can you take after this to make sure that this person does not, like, target us or, you know, in other ways, like, compromise our safety? And they said, oh, well, we can probably do this. And so we accepted that. They had an idea for, well, they accepted our idea for what they could do to keep us safe from this person, right? So we're like, okay, if you say so, like, and so then we went back into the event. But then after the event, when I was alone, the union leadership told me, actually, I'm not really sure if we can do that, just so you know. And I was like, oh, okay. You didn't tell me that when the other people were here too. So that was interesting. And what else happened? So I think afterwards, I just was feeling kind of frustrated. I was like playing what happened in my head and thinking about the fact that the union leadership was just like nowhere to be found when the disruption was happening anyway, even though they had started the workshop with kind of like a plea to everyone. But, you know, really who they mean is like the disruptors, right? To engage respectfully in the workshop. And then when the engaging respectfully was not really happening because, you know, you can't tell people that they don't exist, right? They just were so disengaged, like physically very far removed and like doing something on a device that didn't appear to be related. And I even walked over there in the middle of that disruption and said, hey, like, I think things are getting a little heated. And they said, I'm listening. And didn't intervene at all, which I don't necessarily disagree with the choices they made, but I did notice that those choices seemed to be made out of a place of self-preservation and not solidarity. And that's what I think kind of struck me as something that needed to be addressed. Because I was like, okay, you knew that multiple people were feeling unsafe before the event and during the event, and you didn't even communicate with us. Except once to send like a misleading reassurance, right? So I felt that it was necessary to follow up afterwards with an email to union leadership, because again, I was like, okay, I don't trust conversations that I have with you in person, because the more, like, every time I have a conversation with you in person, you know, you try to like backtrack it or say, I didn't really say that, right? So I sent as an email kind of like, hey, I need an explanation for why you didn't let us know that this person was going to be allowed into the event, even though we asked you. And I need an explanation for, you know, why you didn't intervene at all when people were being really disrespectful and not following the expectations that you set. And you know, I think there was a lot of voices chimed in, because I included as many people as I could think of who were concerned or related, and ultimately 2 days later we just got a response saying, you know, basically like, here are the technicalities and legalities of why I didn't do anything wrong. And again, I don't think that really like helps build solidarity, so it's fine. And also I wonder, like, how do we as a union build power when we don't want to challenge the status quo and we're just kind of like protecting our own, I don't know, protecting ourselves legally instead of acting out of a place of solidarity.
So I just wanted to propose to both of you, Ellen and Susie, in your best case scenario, and of course I'm doing what I said I would do, which is ask a big question with very little time left, but if there was like, what would you like to see in terms of what the role the union could play in order to create a safe space, not a safe space, like, but a place that where people can engage in complicated ideas and have discourse around that and talk about things that maybe are politically unpopular in the moment but feel morally grounded and correct. What would you like to see?
Ellen, you go first.
What would I like to see? Are we going to get kicked off the Zoom soon, by the way?
Well, I have to end this interview very shortly. So this is like a quick response to a very large question.
What I would like to see, I think, I mean, ideally, like, leadership that is willing to fight the status quo, especially when, you know, organizations such as Rethinking Schools are willing to give you so much protection to do it. But I also really just hope that members get more activated and form connections with each other. And that's what I'm hoping is that, you know, I think one of the really good things that came out of this workshop is that we found each other, right? A lot of us teachers, we found each other. And so we can continue to kind of, you know, build relationship and build power with each other and keep pushing things along.
I would like us all to be even half as organized as the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. They are so organized. I would love for us to be organized in the same way, to offer each other solidarity, to not go after each other as much as we can, and remember who our true, I mean, I don't even want to say like enemies are, but really, and who our friends are, and really try to build that power together as much as we can.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us on KBOO tonight. And thank you to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.
This is KBOO Portland.